Engaging with these games is not going to magically transform players into raging sexists. Cultural influence works in much more subtle and complicated ways. Hello and welcome to this episode of Game On Girl, the podcast where we talk about gender and game culture. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy.
And I'm your co-host, Rhonda Oglesby.
And today we're going to talk about Feminist Frequency's second episode in their Tropes versus Women in Video Games, The Damsel in Distress, Part 2, with one of our writers from the site, Toria.
We'll be telling you how we've been geeking out this week and ask Toria to join us.
So stay tuned, and we're glad you're listening to Game On Girl. Part 2 of Damsel in Distress came out on May 28th. We invited Toria to join us for a review and discussion about the topics and interests from this video. So welcome, Toria.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're glad. Always glad to have you on the show. Let's see what spirals we can take this time.
Yeah. That worked so well for that.
It did.
Yeah, I think, I don't know who started it, but the three of us are quite a combo.
Yes.
Well, Damsel in Distress Part 2 is Anita Sarkeesian's Tropes versus Women video series. We discussed Part 1 in Episode 61 with Toria. You don't have to listen to that episode, but it's interesting, like we said, for you to hear us suddenly stumble into religious discussion that was not part of the show notes.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts, though. And it was totally was Toria's fault.
I'm glad it was short. Part 2 is a discussion of damsels in distress trope in modern games. It covers the woman in the refrigerator, the disposable woman, and the mercy killing. Last time we kind of expressed our opinions about the points Anita made and pretty much kind of her research techniques and the basis on which she did her discussion and conclusions. And we ended up by trying to talk about, okay, how can we make things better? We stepped outside of the video and just tried to talk about the complications and the problems that we saw. It's like, okay, if we're not happy with this information, how would we fix it? So, Regina, why don't you start us off by reiterating so that we can kind of have a foundation and also see, did Anita continue in video 2 with the issues that you had from the first video about her approach and research technique?
Yeah, that's an excellent place to start, I think. I think she did continue. One of the things I think, at least I hope I said in the first episode, was that I love the exhaustive nature of her research. She has dug really deeply into lots of different games, lots of different genres, and she's doing a real justice to video games in that sense.
Very impressive.
Yes, it is. Like the breadth and the scope of the games she's covering is just fantastic, and I think that's really good. I tend to always think that straight textual analysis of video games is a little hollow because there's so much more involved in the interactive media of gaming that gamers bring to it that I think these analysis that she's been doing, the way she's been doing the analysis, misses out on that complexity. And I think that that's a real, so I look at the videos and I'm constantly like, that's what the text is kind of doing, but there's so much more that's going on with the gamer, what the gamer brings to the story that's left out of that.
And so can you give an example?
Well, my example from the first episode that we talked about, you know, she talked about like the Zelda series and not being a female empowering thing or having only male protagonists is not sort of being empowering for women. And, you know, I felt very empowered playing Link, and I felt very empowered in those games, regardless of the fact that I was playing a male character. You know, I felt good about those, you know, successes and those stories. So all of that is left out of the analysis that she puts on the games.
And what about you, Toria? Did you feel like this is really a continuation of the same mode from the first video?
I don't think she has a different mode.
And that's another problem, actually.
it's
more of the same, and you can tell just by the way she speaks and the way she presents her information that she's got her trail set out and she's gonna stick to it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm glad you said it that way, because that's kind of the way I feel too. I think the thing that gets in my craw the most is making assumptions about people's motives and thoughts. Mm-hmm. She never mentions that she's talked to these developers or talked to these creative people to ask them what their motives were or what their thoughts were. But she continually attests that they are nefarious and that they have intentions of subjugating women. And I don't think you can say anything toward motive. I think all she's got is what's in front of her, and considering the complexity of the human mind and communication, how can you assume anything about someone?
Actually, in this episode, she says that she doesn't think game developers are sitting around, you know, nefariously twiddling their mustaches and planning, you know, the destruction of female images.
That's just part of the contradictory statements that she makes throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, but I think, and what she doesn't say, and what I wish she would just say at some point in time, but I could make lots of wishes about how I wish she was approaching this. I think, and I said this in the last episode too, the damsel in distress is a lazy storytelling technique. That's all it comes down to, is it's lazy and it's cheap. And if we want games to be art forms, we need to have them be progressive and not be, you know, using old, tired stereotypes as means of how they tell their stories.
And see, I don't have a problem with the storyline that it's not necessarily the damsel in distress. I don't think it's a lazy narrative. I think it's a globally appealing narrative. I just don't think games are globally applying it. If you put out some, you know, men being rescued by women, I would really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I would find that interesting. So it's not necessarily the someone getting rescued to me is, you know, just a weak idea. It's just that I think their application is weak. They're just not doing anything new with it.
Right.
It's pretty sad.
Well, I think part of why it's tired is because there are so few instances of women rescuing men, or even women rescuing other women.
Right.
It's always, well, almost always, there's obviously some exceptions, but it's almost always men rescuing women, and that's why it's tired.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it keeps going back to the same setup and, you know, essentially boils down to the same story. Mm-hmm. Even with some of the permutations, what I thought was interesting, though, about this episode, where she talked about sort of the combinations of the different damsel in distress that you see in sort of the more modern, she called them cocktails, which I don't know. Why? Sorry.
What did she call a cocktail?
She called it the oh God, there was one where she took the woman in the refrigerator and the other one and mixed them together. I can't remember what she called it off the top of my head.
Wasn't it just damsel in the refrigerator?
Damsel in the refrigerator. That's it. Yeah, exactly. So she was still, you know, because the hero needed to save her soul. So the damsel was still essentially alive, but her body was dead. So he needed to go into hell and save her out of hell or something like that. And so that was the idea that she called cocktails, of kind of this mixing up of the different tropes together, but that it didn't really change anything. It just sort of mixed them all up in a cocktail. Maybe if I was drunk when I was watching these, I wouldn't get so angry, but I might get more angry because I have the fiery Italian Rhonda Cena now.
Yeah.
It comes out when I drink, so.
That could be trouble.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Better make sure that's a caramel a caramel martini.
Caramel martini.
Appease the beast.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, she approached from a modern game viewpoint, and the biggest point I think she was wanting to cover was the tropes hadn't changed. They had just gotten extremely more violent, more graphic.
Right.
And it moved into this realm that we talked about, woman in the refrigerator, shell of a woman, and the please kill me woman.
Right.
The euthanization of the woman, which I tend to explore the ideas. And Regina, you'll be really jealous. I actually called Sandy yesterday and was like, I've got to talk to you about this. Because I wanted her ideas on the viewpoints and the essence of mm-hmm. masculinity and femininity. But I don't have nearly as much of a problem with what I'd like to explore with you guys is the woman asking the guy to kill her. Now, at one point, she called this domestic violence, which I just found way over the top. The hero does not want to kill her.
Right.
The setup is not that you get to kill the girl. Mm-hmm. The hero has failed.
Right.
And to me, the view, I was trying to think of the differences between men and women and the way that they see these situations. And to me, what a woman contributes to community is unity and peace and logic and harmony. There's order, there's and comfort.
Socialization.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great socialization. And the man contributes something entirely different, but they both come two sides of the coin of keeping a community together. Either gender would lay down their lives for that community.
Right.
And to me, that's what I see this woman doing at the end. If she has deformed into a horrible, evil creature, she would rather die than be an agent of destruction on her community.
Well, one of the definitions we have of hero or hero action is when they take the action that is for the greater good, you know,
yes.
that they make that sacrifice. And it's sort of, I think, the, you know, huge sacrifice that this is when it is the person that they love that is begging to be released from whatever, you know, essentially yeah. torture they've been put in, the place that they've been put into. I do think that kind of changes the way it should change the way we view it.
Yeah, the way she worded it when she was talking about that segment was really strange. I think it was something like domestic violence against women who have lost control of themselves. And I was like, is that a typical mm-hmm. real world thing? Because normally like, women who lose control of themselves, I don't think that's the reason why they're being abused.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So I actually had my head like cocked over to one side while I was watching it going, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
She got kind of really lost on that idea or so caught up. And this is like a thing that I take issue with a lot of academics who get so caught up in wanting to prove what they're saying that they lose sight of what they're actually looking at. And I yeah. think that's a big problem with this too, is she's looking so intently for the tropes mm-hmm. that she can't see past, you know, past that. And so she's making the arguments work around how she wants them to work. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, where she's sort of contorting her evidence to fit into the box she wants it to fit into. I think she wants to be sort of provocative with saying trigger yes. words like domestic violence to make you kind of go, what? You know, I had no idea this was domestic violence. And if you're just celebratory of the work that she's done, then you're going to be like, oh, yay. Instead of looking at it with a more critical eye, like, not really sure we can say that.
So. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say is that, you know, you really don't have to look that hard.
Right.
You really don't have to contrive anything.
Right.
Because none of us here would deny at all that there is sexism in gaming. There's sexism in the world, sexism at work. And to me, the approach and the technique that Anita is taking is hurting the cause.
Right.
Because I can't stand by her on some of the things that she said.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to what Toria said at the beginning, which is, you know, she only has one mode.
Yeah.
She only has one mode of analysis. And as much as she wants to push it and make it seem like it's a really deep means of analysis, I really think it's only scraping the surface of what's really going on in any kind of video game or even any kind of media.
It's pretty shallow. Yeah.
It is really shallow. I mean, I'm glad that she's got the depth of games that she's representing, because if she didn't have that, it would be laughable, especially with the kind of money she got to support this project. Right? Yeah. I mean, yep, seriously. Exactly. So, you know, I also feel bad because, as we talked about in our E3 episode this year, you know, she suffered so much, you know, Twitter harassment, just making an observation that there were no female protagonists at the yes. Microsoft, you know, which I think is horrible. And I don't think she should have to do that. She suffered harassment as soon as she put this video up. She had tons of people report it as inappropriate content to have it taken down.
Which is just so ridiculous.
Which is absolutely absurd, because it's, what, you know, yeah, it's, yeah, you know, let's report this, because that's going to stop it from, you know, from being here. And that's not fair either. You know, you can disagree with her, obviously.
You know? Wait a minute. Who reported what content?
Well, you know how on YouTube you can report a video as having...
Okay, I watched her video through her website. So it's on YouTube, and people were wanting it taken down.
Yeah,
okay.
People went to the YouTube channel and hit, you know, this video has inappropriate content. And, you know, the automatic reaction is you get enough of those flags and that, you know, YouTube shuts down the video. So the first day that it was out, it got shut down. And then she has to go through the process of, you know, appealing to YouTube and saying, this is online harassment, yada, yada. Which is horrible. It shouldn't, you know, that shouldn't happen either. So,
the boundary and the line where crowdsourcing works is not as big as people think it is. Mm-hmm. It's not that helpful. let's see. There was something else that came up I wanted to ask you guys about. Oh, I did want to point out, she did use one gaming example to me, finally, and it was buried in there, that was a clear example of sexism. Does anybody catch one?
Or is it the girlfriend who was the arm?
No.
That was just creepy.
That was creepy.
That was really, really weird.
That was just weird.
It was weird.
The Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is buried in all of this other muck that she's talking about, though.
She is Duke Nukem as well, and I think that was that one also had.
Well, I don't remember.
Some pretty overtly sexist.
Yeah, but the Grand Theft Auto one. I mean, I don't play Grand Theft Auto, so in case people don't know about it, there's a cutscene that something is actually finished, it's fading out, and there's a girl who's talking. No, 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 no.
The girl he just rescued.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big point.
The girl he just
rescued. After the screen fades, apparently he shoots her.
Right.
For talking too much.
For talking.
Because she's complaining about, oh, I broke a nail, or, oh, I did this, and la, 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 la. Yeah, that was.
Now that is a problem.
Yeah. And GTA is known for that.
Yeah.
And GTA and Duke Nukem both sort of revel in their, you know.
Yes.
Sexist and misogynistic approaches,
which, you know, that's fine. It's their creative narrative. If they're people that want to buy it, you know, it's a free market situation,
right?
And which leads into what, you know, I wanted to ask you guys about, in what is the problem? So what should Anita be talking about?
Oh God.
You don't know where to start?
I don't know where to start.
There's way too much to unpack with that.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that we go with the idea that my thing is that nobody is completely evil except Voldemort. So if we assume that the developers and the creatives are ignorant, or just thoughtless, or just money grubbing, and that they're not purposely saying, hey, let's make a game because I really would love to beat and kill my wife, but it's not legal, so I'd like to make a game where I beat up women. If we assume that our creative people are not doing that, then I think that our only real huge problem is that we don't have a reverse narrative. We don't have the female protagonist.
Yeah. I agree. I think, and I'm curious to see, because as she ended this episode, as I said, you know, she said that the next episode is talking about some indie games that are sort of turning the tables and breaking through the stereotypes, which, I mean, I understand kind of the progression of the way she did it, you know, the retro games, the current games, and then the ones that are breaking the trope, but I feel like I needed that sooner. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been so fed up with this right now had I had more glimmers of hope that there were different games and there was an addressing of, you know, some of the characters, like, you know, Rhonda, you've been playing the most recent Lara Croft, you know, adventure. Yeah. And I think that that's a really good example of the development of female characters. And as we saw when we were at PAC, the vast majority of people, you know, writing and working on the game, at least the ones I had, you know, on the panel, were women. So there were, you know, women in the game that were developing the game. And so I feel like what I tell my students when they're writing research papers is it's one thing to just be doing research, but what you should be thinking about is what you want people to do with the research that you're presenting to them. There's no call to action in this. I mean, she doesn't even like go the step that you just went, Rhonda, where you said, you know, don't buy it. If you don't like the, you know, it's an overly misogynistic game. I don't buy Grand Theft Auto. I don't play that game. You know, you're welcome to buy it and play it if you want to, but it just, you know, it insults and offends me. And that's another problem that I have with the way she presents her series is it's like, here it is. And it's like, well, okay, so this has made me all enraged. What am I supposed to do now? Or, you know, why aren't you looking at this in a more complex and deep way? And that's why I opened the show with a quote from her episode here where she says cultural influence works in much more subtle and complicated ways. Well, duh, you're missing like half of them in this episode. Your analysis is missing all of the complicated ways that, you know, people take in and play with this media. You know, so tell us, help us like figure out a solution for this instead of just saying, oh, this is so bad.
Yeah, that's the other problem I have where I said I hate it when you make assumptions about the way people think.
Yeah.
The other thing is presenting material just to stir emotion.
Right.
And that's all this is doing. It like you said, the result of that is there's no call to action.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
There's just indignation. And so now you've got, you know, women stomping their feet and hands on their hips. And it's like, okay, that accomplishes nothing.
Right.
I think somewhere we could go with this is, you sent a link to us, Regina, earlier talking about the Princess Zelda
games.
Oh,
yes, exactly. Exactly.
So that might be a way to take this. I've got the quote here. I think it was somebody had asked one of the developers of the Legend of Zelda games if they would ever consider making a Zelda game where Zelda was the protagonist, where you actually got to play as her. And he goes, and I can't pronounce his name to save my life.
Yeah.
But he replies with, I guess if people have strong feelings about it, then it's something to consider. I'll keep it in mind. And I was like, really? That hasn't crossed your mind till now? Like, seriously?
And he's been working on Zelda since 1998.
Yeah, that just blew my mind.
Yeah, I know it was the first time he had thought about, you know, oh, maybe we should make this damsel. Well,
didn't he also say in the quote something about, yeah, people ask me that all the time?
Yeah, he said the second time I've received this question during this E3. So he'd been asked it multiple times. I guess that's part of what made it notable.
Yeah, I don't know how to begin to get across to the developers that the gender of the protagonist doesn't make a difference, and that their market numbers should be showing something that they're ignoring. They have to be ignoring it, that, you know, 50% of their gamers are women.
Right. Oh, that's what, yeah. I think that is missed. I think
it can't be missed. I've been involved in marketing and stuff to know that they do not know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I
just think they're scared.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I talked with a developer a long time ago before. Well, as I was working on the research, I talked to someone who works in hardware at Nintendo. And he said one of the reasons why there are so many shooter games is the mechanics are really easy to create a shooter game. And on top of that, the likelihood it's going to be successful is very high as well. So because the game industry is so new, he said, you know, it doesn't want to take those many risks because it's still sort of a fledgling, you know, market just in general. And so, you know, and that was, you know, a number of years ago now, not that it's really, you know, changed that much in that time. But I think because, as you said, you know, 50% of gamers are women, they need to, you know, game developers just need to become a little bit more sensitive to demographic is.
Well, this kind of brings to mind a point that was made in the misrepresentation documentary, is that one of the ideas when they were studying why there's so many male protagonists in film and on TV is that people know that women will watch movies about men will watch movies about men, women watch movies about women, men will not watch movies about women. So I think maybe that's also part of what's that's going also, on with gaming.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Or not even that that's what's happening or that that's something that they've seen, because, you know, we can put Tomb Raider out there again.
As, yeah, exactly.
You know, being very successful and having plenty of male, you know, players. Mm-hmm. And even you can take that a step further and say how many men are creating female avatars in MMOs, which, as we know, is a high number as well. So I could see how they might be using that as kind of a crutch. Oh, well, we still need to keep this demographic and we can't alienate them because they don't want to play women. I don't know that the evidence actually backs it up.
it probably doesn't. Mm-hmm. I would say, especially in more recent years, mm-hmm. now that there is this feminist movement where it's like, okay, we have to get more women out there. We've got to make them more visible because they're half the population. Like, why are we not going to have these people out here?
Right.
But I think for a long time that was kind of the stigma. Like, if you look at movies specifically, like, there's a whole genre just called chick flicks that most guys will refuse to watch because they're movies about women doing women stuff.
Yeah, you can go into a movie theater for any of those and look around and be like, yep, there's a bunch of women drinking wine in this movie. Like, if you go to see Twilight, and they're not even like adolescent women, they're women.
Yeah, the Twilight moms are out in force. And
absolutely.
Well, and to me that just shows, just like you were saying earlier, Regina, that's just lazy storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can have a female protagonist in a movie and it'd be very, very interesting.
Oh, definitely.
No doubt.
But if it's just a bunch of girls sitting around twittering and not like tweeting, but talking, like buzzing a bees and drinking wine and talking about Jane Austen and stuff. It's the same way as young adolescent boy coming of age movies. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time with those. They don't interest me that much. And it's a story about maleness, being mm-hmm. male and becoming male. And a lot of the chick flicks are about being female.
Right.
And I think there's a way of telling that story of what it's like being a female that would be more insightful and more telling and more interesting to guys than the way they tell them.
Yeah.
They kind of tell them kind of silly. I mean, I can't stand chick flicks, and I especially hate female coming of age movies.
Yeah.
I just screw the hell out of those.
I can't even think of any of those.
Oh, they're awful. Like Juno.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
And there was another one here recently I started watching. It was just painful. I just wanted to turn it off. But I had to go back and mention one comment that Anita did make that I thought was pretty insightful. Let me just read what I wrote down because it was just pretty good. Developers paint themselves into a corner by limiting their mechanics.
Yes.
If violence is a primary mechanism in the game, that's the main way they have to deal with women.
Mm-hmm.
It limits their options for problem solving, which goes back to what you said, Regina.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And I agree. I noticed that. I picked that up on that quote as well and thought that was a really insightful thing. And we've actually had discussions about that before on the show where we've talked about how we need to explore game playing mechanisms that aren't going to be, you know, just pick up a gun and kill it or beat it with a stick or strangle it or whatever else it is that you do, you know.
Yeah.
If you're going to go so far as to decide to put a female character in the narrative and it's going to be a rescue situation, then you can't do that offhandedly at the end of the idea without thinking through how the male character is going to be able to deal with the opposite gender.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, dude, let's make a shooter game. Right. Oh, that's awesome. Like, you know, his girlfriend gets kidnapped and we have to save her.
Right.
A little more thought than that.
Right. Yeah. Take it a little step further than that.
And I apologize to all male creatives and developers for stereotyping you as dudes.
Dude. Talk about movies I avoid. The dude movies. Mm. Yeah, no thanks. But I have one quote that I have to pick serious issue with from our dear.
Just one.
No, one that, like, when it came up, I was like ready to throw something at my TV screen. Like,
you had to pause and rant around the room.
Yeah, I had to kind of like blow some steam off because I was like, I can't believe that those words just came out of her mouth. So this is the quote. Depictions of female vulnerability are used as an easy trigger for an emotional reaction in male players.
I don't think that's what's happening when
Really?
Yeah. Say no. It again. What now?
Depictions of female vulnerability are used as an easy trigger for an emotional reaction in male players.
Okay, and so what's your issue with the quote?
That she thinks that only male players are going to have that reaction.
Oh, yeah. that's the problem you have with
That's what hit me. I mean, you know.
I have a completely different problem.
Well, that's awesome, because that's how this should work. That's why I bring you on the show, because you have different reactions. But
what was your reaction, Tori?
Yes.
My reaction with that was going, I don't think that the reaction that they have has anything to do with the vulnerability bringing out an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
I think it's more, oh, well, she's weak. I have to go save her now.
Right.
It's got, I don't think it has anything to do with an emotional reaction. I think it's more triggering the sort of masculine mindset. Just like, okay, got to go save her. Gone.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't think there's anything like, oh my God, I hope she's okay. Like, there's nothing like,
right.
That's almost how I think. And here we go. Stereotyping. I'm going to feel really awful for saying this, but that's how I would react as a woman. If I'm playing a game and I'm really invested in it and one of the characters needs rescuing, I'm just like, oh my God. Okay. What am I going to do? I got to go save her. What's going on? But I don't think that's what would normally go through a guy's mind just because she's vulnerable.
Right.
That doesn't click in my head at all.
I would hope that a woman getting in trouble in a game would evoke an emotional response.
Yeah.
Period. I would hope a child getting in trouble. Any human getting into a bad situation, I would hope, would provoke an emotional response. Just because it happens to be a guy and it happens to be a girl doesn't make it sexist.
Right.
No matter what the genders are. I mean, we've seen buddy movies where... You know, friends forever, and the buddy dies in war.
Right.
The guy has an emotional response.
Right.
Because he's human.
Right. Exactly. But part of my problem with this, not that just she's focusing on male players, which was my initial reaction.
Oh yeah.
But it's also a heteronormative reaction where she's like, it has to be, you know, male, female, you know, structure. Yes. And if she is critiquing that, which she might be, she doesn't say it. And that's a problem for me too. Don't pin us into this. That's part of what games are trying to break out of. BioWare's excellent example of that in their romance options and, you know, Dragon Age. So, you know, don't pin it in here. So that was, that was one of many moments where I wanted to throw something at the screen.
Well, speaking of that, are there many games that kind of break that where it isn't heteronormative? Because I can't think of too many, which isn't surprising because I don't really play that a whole lot of games that would really
that would have those
like that.
Yeah.
But so like Dragon Age and I think Mass Effect has something like that as well.
Yeah, which are both BioWare.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, and there was
I suppose.
Yeah, there's another one that I can't think of off the top of my head that I know somebody who does writing about. Sexuality in games, but
did you mention Dragon Age?
I did,
okay.
Dragon Age and BioWare and Mass Effect both have options to romance same gender.
What about Star Wars? Does it
I don't
they don't do romance, do they?
I don't think because Jedi's don't do romance, so
yeah,
they might on the dark side, I don't know.
Well, maybe that's part of why she doesn't address that aspect, is maybe because there are so few games that even bring out that aspect of romance and relationships. Like, I'm not excusing her for not addressing it. Maybe it's just something that it never really occurred to her, just because there are so few examples when compared to the rest of the game universe. Yeah,
the overwhelming number of examples you can come up with to support the
She's but I think Regina's point is good, because she is coming to these scenarios assuming a heterosexual relationship, again assuming the gender of the player has an effect, and assuming the gender of the character has an effect, instead of just looking at them as, okay, if this were any human being, but she's assuming a male-female relationship in every situation, because that helps promote the sexist idea.
Right.
The sexist idea has to be male to female.
Right. So she has to pigeonhole it for it to support her argument. Yep. That's part of the problem.
Well, there's another aspect about this that I want to bring up, because you also mentioned about how, I believe Toria may have mentioned it, about how gaming is such a new medium. And she says something at the end that I think is completely, I don't want to say irrational. It's not irrational, but it just doesn't make any sense in context of the genre. Mm-hmm. Okay. And basically what she says is that games do not operate in a vacuum. You have to take into account what you're doing in a game and its context in society. And it's like, okay, hang on a second. All right, we're talking about aliens and we're talking about, you know, blobs and mushrooms and monkeys. And you're wanting to know how that, number one, should fit into the context of society. And number two, you're talking about a video game that's a side scroller. And wow, its big narrative is supposed to fit into the cultural mindset. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that was a little bit on the ridiculous side.
Yeah. And what's really funny is that you can take that argument that she has at the end, and it's the same argument that people have about people becoming violent because they play violent video games.
Yeah.
It's the same argument, which is totally, as far as I'm concerned and the research supports, bogus. So,
yeah, I just I understand, and it, to me, it's a weak attempt at talking about how the gaming industry needs to be culturally responsible, you know, responsible in their community about the stuff that they're portraying. But that's the wrong genre.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody needs to be responsible about the images that they're portraying, or at least have storytelling that allows for characters that end up in these situations to have the kind of depth that makes us care about them. What you know, when we're talking about the mercy killing example, and she talked about Borderlands 2 and the sacrifice of Angel.
Yeah.
I loved that in the story. It was one of the most moving experiences I've had in a game in the last, you know,
wonderful.
two years. It was absolutely gorgeous, and the way it was handled, and it was just almost transformative in terms of what the genre can do, because so much of that game is irreverent and funny, but you get so attached to those characters and you've been questioning Angel the entire time you're going through the storyline. I'm sorry if there's spoilers here, but it has been out for a while. You know, the entire time you're going through the storyline, you don't know if she's working with you. You don't know who she is. She's good. She's bad. You know, there's this play of her character and this depth. And then you go into this, you know, this transformative experience of the sacrifice of Angel. And I just felt like she just brushes over that, mm-hmm. that experience that, you know, male and female gamers have playing that. And that's where, you know, she comes down to this is written for male players and male players have this reaction to it. She's leaving out 50% of gamers there too.
Yeah.
Actually, that sounds, this is kind of ironic considering one of the quotes I have written down. Is that she was talking about how in video games, women's deaths are more important than their lives, and I think she just proved her own point.
Yeah. I mean, historically, if we're talking about just everyday life, these kind of things don't happen. But we're talking about epics,
right? Mm-hmm. Right.
And in an epic, you've got heroes, and a hero is that person that lays down their life so that in the future.
Right.
That people will have a better life, their community will be better, their children have a better life, and they won't have to go through this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the Wrath of Khan, right?
Yeah.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yeah, I mean, it's too pinpoint of a viewpoint. And I tend to like, I want to go at something with a very balanced mind, try to be open-minded about, you know, intentions and stuff like that. But when we're sitting here desperately trying to just bring more awareness to the idea that, you know, women are in gaming and, you know, this is not a threat, and we just want to have, you know, equal footing, equal storytelling. And then to have this kind of thing come out and create an emotional backlash.
Right.
It's hard to deal with, because whenever you want to talk about it, I mean, the people see her.
Right. Right. And then they shut down, which doesn't help that, as I said, her tone and her approach and how she records the videos is so condescending.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, this is so obvious and everybody should see this. And, you know, this is the only way to look at this when, Like she says, cultural influence works in much more subtle and complicated ways, and she misses almost every subtle and complicated way that it's working in this. So I love using people's words against them. I mean, I just love that.
Well, hers are so easy because she contradicts herself all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like one of the last things I did write down this. Gaming is a great medium to deal with difficult and painful subjects. It's like, no, counseling is. You know, go see a priest or something. How many times have we had gamers on here? It's like, I want to escape.
Right.
I want to go somewhere where I can be a hero. I want to go somewhere where I can win.
Right. Or they want to go someplace and be that ideal person that they can't be in their life. And that is reward enough for them. Or they're exploring different aspects of their personality by what they're doing.
Yeah. I don't want to deal with domestic violence. I don't want to deal with genocide or anything like that. I want to go into a game and be the hero,
right? Yeah.
I want the medal.
Wreck-It Rondo over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Wreck-It Rondo, that's right.
That totally works. I might call you that from now on.
Wreck-It Rondo.
Wreck-It Rondo.
I'm going to wreck it. Felt like that today. That'll work for me. I'm going to wreck it. And I'm sure nobody else is nearly as amused as we are. And we're not even drinking.
I know. Sad.
Well, Toria, how did you feel? I mean, how far into the video did you get before you started having reactions to the video? Or how did you feel at the end of the video?
Well, I think my reactions are usually a little more tame than yours are. Regina, because I don't know, I can sit through them and be pretty calm, and then I'll take everything and go, okay, you know what, I can kind of see the points you're making, all right, that's cool, and then afterwards I'll think on it and I'll go, wait, something about this is not making sense.
Something,
so I'll go back
funny.
And watch it again and go, oh, all right then, that was not as good as I thought it was.
That's but pretty cool, because you approach it really differently. You sit and passively let them have their talk, and then you think over it at the end.
Yeah, that's how I deal with a lot of things, which is in some situations not the best way to handle things. But I don't know. I have this kind of naive hope that she'll have valid points, and so I'll watch them really just quite contentedly and go, okay, yeah, that sounds decent. And then my brain kicks in after a while and goes, no.
No.
I was on vacation while you were watching this. What are you thinking? this is not a good discussion to have. But I think, I don't know, I also have a little bit of a pity sort of thing going for Anita just because of all the backlash she does get.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like I just want to give her a chance just because a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
I
can understand that too.
Yeah, but even so, after a while, I'm just like, no, you're not helping. This is not helping. This is not a good way to have like a decent discourse about this. Yeah. And then it just kind of gets exasperating. But I never get angry the way they seem to.
Well,
so I find those reactions really quite interesting to listen to.
Well, to put that a little in context, you have to think about, you know, this is what I research and what I talk about too.
Oh yeah.
And to see someone who has so much traction and such a large following, which might be, you know, a large percentage of haters for all I know. You know, I think that part of the reason why I have such strong reactions to it is because it could be so much better. You know, there could be so many better points that could be made. And it's just really a shame that that ends up getting missed through all this.
I just have strong emotions in general.
Yes.
Which is valid.
Yeah, it was always a real shock for my husband when we, after we were married, he really loved when I had a good time, because when I had a good time, I really had a good time. But when I was angry, I was really angry.
And then he didn't like that quite so much.
No, and it really just flipped him out. And I'm like, well, you got to take one with the other, dude. It's like,
this is a package deal. It's all part of Wreck-It Rhonda.
Just take all of the emotions and divide them by two. And that's probably what you're normally used to. But I'm not veiled usually in any way.
That's funny.
Am I, Regina?
No. Not at all. That's part of why I love you.
Just like, don't ask me if you don't want to know.
Well, I'm like that too. You know this.
Yeah.
You don't want an honest answer. You don't come to me.
Well, we really enjoy talking with Toria. And of course, we love talking about the conversation that's going on in the community about gender in gaming and gender in the geek community. If you guys have got any comments you'd like to leave us, we've got all of our social media sites out on our website, and we'd love to hear from you. Well, we've got a new segment that we've just started recently. I think we've introduced it a couple of times, but we're going to talk about the ways that we, Regina and I, are geeking out during the week. And we're really glad Tori is here. We'd love to hear what she's got. We usually talk about what we're reading, what we're watching, and what we're playing. So, Regina, what are you reading this week?
I'm still working on Wild Magic by Tamara Pierce, which is the story of Dane, who is a sort of a mage who has a special relationship with animals, and that sounds really wrong.
Just a little bit.
Not that kind of relationship. She she can actually communicate non-verbally, and she can speak to all different kinds of animals. And so this is her origin story of, in a larger sort of world story. And we just had a major battle where she actually had to keep some of the animals from sacrificing themselves in order to support the humans who are fighting an invasion. And it's just learning. I just finished a section where one of her mentors came to her, who also has a similar gift, but with horses. And horses specifically, she can speak and talk to horses, who told her, you know, the animals need to fight the fight as well, because this is their land and they're being attacked as well. You know, you don't need to shield and protect them from this. They need to be able to defend themselves and defend their territory as well. So it was really interesting, really moving kind of moment there, where she had to kind of look at the world in a broader perspective, because her ideal is, she's like, these animals become my friends and I know them, you know, and I can't send them out to fight. And her mentor was like, this is their home too. So it was really, really poignant. It's great. It's a great book. If you haven't read the Tortall series by Tamara Pierce, there are three series of three books each. And this is the middle series of that.
Toria, are you much of a reader?
Not as much as I used to be, sadly. I've got about, 15 different books on my bookshelf that I've been meaning to read for about a year and a half. I think the last book I actually read was, Catching Fire in the Hunger Games series, because I was going to try and write an article comparing those to a different series, but I kind of forgot. But I'm really into audiobooks. So I think last night I started listening to Austin Land by Shannon Hale, which is about this woman who's obsessed with Jane Austen books, and her great aunt, who she's met like twice in her life, kind of finds out about this obsession. And when she passes away, she leaves this woman something in her will. And it's basically a trip to England, to this place where they basically pretend to live in like Regency England. And it's kind of supposed to be her way of getting over the Mr. Darcy figure and just play acting her way out of the obsession. And it's hilarious because it's done in such a way where you get an insight into her mind, but it's not written in a first person perspective. So it's weird to listen to, but it's really entertaining at the same time.
Cool.
It is kind of chick flickish, obviously, but it's hilarious to read. So if you're into any of that kind of stuff, I'd really recommend it.
Oh, that actually sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it does.
It's a lot of fun. If you get the audiobook, it's about 6 hours, which is a pretty decent length. So
yeah. Oh, and I consider audiobooks reading, Toria. So
yeah, me too. Okay.
I don't know. I was kind of waffling on that because I listen to audiobooks like to put me to sleep. So I'll listen to like half of them and then I'll just kind of forget, because I'm just like, I kind of listened to it.
I remember this scene, and then there's a big block that I don't remember.
Yeah.
And then,
There's another one that I listen to frequently called The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker. And it's it's not a really cheerful book to read or listen to. But Gavin De Becker is an expert in in the field of predicting violent behavior. He kind of pioneered it, and his book is mostly about dealing with people who may become violent either towards you or towards people just around them, either in a relationship or in the workplace or anything like that. So it's got some triggering content because it talks about like case studies of real people being stalked and raped and that kind of thing. So it's not a pleasant book to read.
Wow.
But
so it's nonfiction.
It's nonfiction. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's interesting to listen to the points he makes because he can kind of talk you through realizing how people react to other people, and how consent is a lot of the time nonverbal, which is really interesting, and all that kind of thing. Like, it's really complicated to explain, but it's a fascinating book to read, and I would recommend it to pretty much anybody who's ever had like any inklings that they're in trouble in a relationship or at work or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an incredible read.
Interesting. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what are you reading, Rhonda?
I am about halfway through the graphic novel Osborne by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios. They are Marvel writers and artists. And this Osborne is one of the bad guys. I believe he's supposed to be the Green Goblin, maybe. I'm only halfway through it, but Osborne's a bad guy, and it's sort of a story of about him, and it's really beautifully drawn. I love the art, and the story's interesting because there's some interesting female characters in it, and it's fun to kind of watch that. There's a couple of bad guys that are females, and a couple of women in the story, so I'm enjoying it.
Cool, very cool.
What about what you're watching, Regina?
I'm watching one of my favorite guilty pleasures. The third season of Pretty Little Liars just came on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
And it is one of the most vapid, just awful sort of suspense teenage drama shows ever. And it's all a big intrigue thing. And there's somebody who's sort of taunting and haunting these girls. And it's just really bad. In that, like,
but it's good.
Yeah,
at the same time.
In that good, like, you have to know, you know, what happens, and then it's got the whole soap opera thing where I won't say what happened because I know if anybody's like me and you wait for things to come out on Netflix, I don't want to give anything away since it's only been out for a week and a half yeah. or so. But there's one plot twist where you find out that one person is working for the bad guys, and it's just absolutely devastating moment. And I actually like because I watch these by myself, so I actually verbally like it's like, oh my god, I can't believe it. No, it can't be. I don't believe it. It's so wrong. It's got to be wrong. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
It was fun, but they're very fun. Yeah, well, you got to miss all that since I was obsessed with HDTV when we were in Boston.
Oh yeah, yeah.
What have you been watching, Toria?
I've got about three different shows on the go, and I'm going to have to try and water them down so I don't take too much time talking about them. I've been watching Orphan Black, which I can't even talk about it really without spoiling everything. But
I just recently read something about that. I didn't even know anything about it, and I wrote it down on my watch list.
Don't read anything about it. Just watch it.
Okay.
Because if you read anything, it'll spoil it, and it won't be as good. So I don't know.
Well, just say whether you like it or not.
It's amazing.
Okay, good. I'm glad it stays on my list. All right.
Yeah. Well, Melissa, like our mutual friend, recommended it to me, and she's like, "Have you seen this show?" And I was like, "No. What's it about?" She's like, "Oh, you don't know. Perfect." So she's like, "Watch it. Watch it. Watch it." I was like, "Okay. Okay.
I love
and,
that."
And oh my god, it's one of the most brilliant shows I think I've ever seen. And Part of the appeal for me is the main actress is from my home province in Saskatchewan, which is a big deal because you almost never hear about actors from Saskatchewan. So I'm like, yes,
nice.
You are doing so well. I love it. So there's that. what else have I been watching? Kitchen Nightmares, uh-huh. Just kind of on YouTube because
yeah.
it's entertaining in all the wrong ways for me, but it's really
it's pretty much the same thing.
It's great background noise, I think, to me.
Yeah.
Then I've also got some Sue Thomas FBI going whenever I have a few moments to spare. It's a Canadian TV show about a deaf woman who goes to work for the FBI in a surveillance and a surveillance team. And it's based on a true story, and which I find amazing. And plus it's Canadian TV, which is normally not that great. But I'm just like, I love this show. And it's, I don't know, I find it fascinating because you get to know a lot about deaf culture, which isn't something that you really see in the media anywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
And it tackles a whole bunch of different issues. Like, it goes over the racism, especially as it comes, when it concerns law enforcement, especially in the States, because it's, you know, set in the United States.
Right.
And it goes over just life struggles, whether you're hearing or deaf or disabled otherwise, and a whole bunch of different things. And it's just, it's really neat to watch. And it's family friendly, too. So it's like kids could watch it if you wanted them to.
Cool.
You know, it's the dry season for me. I'm just waiting for kickoff again. I'm waiting for the first drafts to come in and so that I can finally watch a new season of shows. So I've gone back. There's been a lot of advertising for Defiance. So I decided to go back and start watching it. And very sadly, I can't watch it.
It's just
not very good.
Oh, is Defiance the one that had the game associated with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's too bad.
I haven't even looked at the game, which somebody mentioned to me about the game. They said the game was kind of offensive anyway. So,
All right.
But because I like Julie Benz and I really want anything that, you know, she's been in to be successful.
Right.
But it is, if you want to see anything that's got really lazy storytelling in it, really lazy writing, that's what the Defiance is. I mean, it's any story that you can think of, Romeo and Juliet, whatever, you know, storyline you want to think of with aliens. That's all it is. That's pretty bad.
There's nothing that is a faster deal breaker for me than bad writing.
Yeah it's just not very good. So much potential. Last night I watched Oz the Great and Powerful and barely watched it. It was uninteresting.
I looked at the trailers for that and I was like, you gotta be kidding.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. But I'd heard something about James Franco just sort of walked through it and I was like, I can't see him doing that. He's a really high energy guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling a lot of times, a lot of things get credited to the actors when it's the director or the writer's fault.
Yeah.
And it's also really, really hard to ruin Mila Kunis as well.
That's true.
And they managed to do both in this movie.
Oh, wow.
That's they ruined both of them. And it just was thoroughly disappointing. It is worse than being just bad. I mean, it was a disappointment. So still nothing to hold me through the season. Well, Toria, are you playing anything this week? Any games at all?
I am, as a matter of fact. I've started playing Civ 5 again, which is a mistake. Cause I was up till 2 o'clock last night trying to kill Napoleon.
Yeah.
I feel miserably.
Feel your girlfriend.
Just one more.
Five more turns. That should be enough. So I've been playing that, and I've also I just recently picked up a 3DS XL and Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Oh, I've been hearing things about that.
It's a cute little game. I played Animal Crossing like a couple years ago when I borrowed my friend's DS by accident because she left it in my house. Nice. And it's an interesting little addition to that game. I'm quite enjoying it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, what have you been playing, Rhonda?
You know. last time, if you guys were listening, Regina told me about Gems with Friends, and she was telling me, please get on there. I want to play with you. So I did. Right after the podcast, I downloaded it, started playing. And she's, of course, crushing me. It's an utter slaughter. I mean, I go out and I look at the scores and I compare. I was like, how the hell can you get a score that high?
I bet their mastery in you is really happy, Regina.
Yes.
She's killing me.
I knew. But, you know, you're scoring what I was scoring when I first started playing, too. It's got a high learning curve. You have to play it a while to get to the point where you get I wanted to make sure to say to you today because I didn't want you to think that I was just destroying you for the fun of destroying you, although there was a little fun involved in that.
Oh, you got a little dark side of
it. I do. It's true.
Well, it's a game that I find it very interesting, but I have a very hard time with games that have a timer on them.
Oh.
And I tend to not, my learning curve is even higher for those because I like to sit and ponder usually.
So you panic with the timer ticking. Yeah.
The only other thing I got a Humble Bundle a couple of weeks ago. If anybody's ever heard of those, usually you can get those on Steam or go to Humble Bundle itself and get a package deal of games. And someone came to me a couple of weeks ago and said, oh, there's a great Humble Bundle out there. You ought to get it. And so I've been playing Back to the Future.
Oh, nice. I want to do
that. I haven't played a game like that in a long time. It's just basically a storytelling, problem-solving game. And it used to be the kind of games I played all the time and really, really enjoyed. So I just gotten started on it, but it's really pretty much everything about it I like. The graphics are completely appropriate. They're very nice and bright and crisp. The voicing so far has been really good, except for one character I just met, and the voice is just really bad. But I like getting into that kind of game again.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah. What about you?
I have another iPhone game I've been playing, and I would like to proudly declare that I got my best friend from high school, and she got her parents to play it as well.
Wow.
So I have been stretching my gateway drug influence. It's called Bookworm Heroes by PopCap. And you guys may know or may have played Bookworm. It was a Yahoo game for a while and designed by PopCap. And so you essentially just make, in Bookworm, you just make tiles to make words. And you go as long and far as you can, and eventually the tiles will start being on fire, and you have to make sure to use those, or they burns up the library, because you're a bookworm in a library. But Bookworm Heroes actually has different characters that you can play against another player. So it's a Scrabble-like game where you have, I think, 16 tiles with letters on them that have different point values and different special tiles. And the characters have different abilities and different special abilities that they can use to either attack or heal themselves or change tiles to things that they want. And so you just play sort of competitively against someone else.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun. It's, again, it's quick. You might like it more than Gems, Rhonda, since there's no timer on it. And it's also a free game. It's been really fun. So Amity and I have been playing it on a regular basis now. And she messaged me this weekend. She'd been visiting with her parents and got them hooked on playing it, too. So,
yeah. You know me. I'm not great with words.
Well, one of the characters, her special ability is she gets tiles that are worth more, these purple tiles that are worth more. She's actually like a hacker character. And you can't, when you use those purple tiles, you can't make words that are more than five characters. So you can make real small words with her, and they're super powerful. So, yeah.
Sounds like my kind of gal.
Yeah. I think you'd like her since, you know, you're a programmer too, so.
Okay, now, have either of you heard of Candy Crush?
Yes.
I have not.
I should have known.
I won't play it. I have heard of it, yes.
The guys apparently, if they ever listen to this podcast, I have no problem with them knowing that I'm talking about them and they don't even know it, because they absolutely tickle me to death, because they went all bananas back when the Game of Thrones season ended.
Oh.
And they were like a group of hens. So, oh my God, did you see it? Did you see it? Yeah. I can't believe it. And the only way that makes that any different or grown up is they use several expletives. But yesterday they started talking about Candy Crush, and there's absolutely nothing more hysterical than hearing these guys using four-letter words talking about fudge and jellies and jams and candy pieces. And it's like, I just die laughing sitting there listening to them talk about playing Candy Crush.
It was really funny, because last in the spring semester when I was teaching in person, one of my students was like, what is this Candy Crush thing people are always sending me requests about? And I'm like, oh, it's one of those viral Facebook games. And he's like, so he installed it and he like played it for like 5 minutes in class when we were on a break, and he's like, oh, this is like Bejeweled but with limited turns you can take. And then he comes back in the next week in class, and he's like, oh my God, I'm so addicted to this game.
Yeah, that's all they kept saying. They
can't stop playing it.
Yeah, they got one of the guys started playing it yesterday. One is the dealer like you, Regina, and gets everybody started on it. So this other guy got started playing it, and he's sitting there going, and he was like, "Oh my effing God, I cannot stop playing this game." And I would turn around and see him with his phone under his desk playing this game.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, he's asking for a charger. And and I was like, "You played a game till your phone went down?" No. Yes. No, you did. I'm watching you play. It's hilarious.
Goodness.
Well, we'd love to know how you guys have been geeking out this week. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook or on our website, GameOnGirl.com. You've been listening to Game On Girl. You can find our social media connections on our website, GameOnGirl.com. I'm the co-host, Rhonda Oglesby. You can find me on Twitter at RoRoom. That's RhoRhoom. You can email Rhonda at GameOnGirl.com.
And I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, or Doc Liz with two Z's, as I'm known on Twitter and Steam. Great thanks to Toria for joining us today to talk about Damsels in Distress Part 2. We'll have links to the video up on the website and links to her Twitter if you'd like to follow her there. Game On Girl is available on iTunes and Stitcher streaming. These links, along with references made in the show, can be found on our website, GameOnGirl.com. This podcast is edited by Ryan Broom at Desert Tree Media, and the theme song Good Day by Triple Fox is used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thanks for listening, and until next time, game on!